Welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. For the next month, KBOO has shut down daily operations for volunteers as part of our efforts to stem the spread of COVID-19. So today and for the next month at least, I'll be recording this show in my home studio. My guest phone feed is coming through my iPhone into a recorder, so the sound may be a little bit funky. But at least we're soldiering on here at KBOO to bring you all the programming you value and rely on, especially in challenging times like this. Last year, residents of Randall, Washington, a small community in eastern Lewis County, nestled between Mount Rainier and Mount St. Helens, learned that Crystal Geyser had bought property to get access to spring water for a water bottling plant. They immediately pressured their county commissioners to stop the project by not granting it any permits. From there, the battle between Crystal Geyser and the residents of Randall only escalated and has gone statewide. Today, we talk with Craig Jasmer, who is with Lewis County Water Alliance, about why there's so much community opposition to Crystal Geyser's proposed bottling plant and how they hope to defeat it. Craig, welcome to Locus Focus.
Hi, Barbara. Thanks for having me.
First of all, how did you find out about the fact that Crystal Geyser was planning on building this plant?
You know, that's a very interesting story because to this day, there's been no public notice from Crystal Geyser or from the Department of Ecology letting anyone know that this was being planned. But about 9 months ago, I was sitting on my property having a campfire, and I heard the well drilling operations happening. And from that moment, started investigating and talking to neighbors. Really, our conversations with the neighbors are what saved us. The neighbor across the street from where Crystal Geyser was drilling had heard a rumor that the previous property owner had sold to a bottling company. And so that started us digging even deeper. We just got online and made phone calls and made public records requests and found that Crystal Geyser had indeed purchased the property last May. And they had also applied for a water right permit to pump 400 gallons per minute out of wells that they drilled on the property.
So I'm curious, what was that drilling sound that you were hearing? Was it connected to Crystal Geyser doing exploratory drilling?
Yes, it was. It was the drilling company that they had hired to start doing their preliminary testing.
So once you found out that they had these plans, what did you do next?
Well, our immediate reaction was that we needed to organize and notify our neighbors that this was happening since there was no notification happening. And so what we did was we gathered a few of our neighbors and we put together flyers and we organized a local town hall meeting at the Randall Fire Station. We hustled and sent out as many flyers and notices that we could and held that meeting. And close to 300 people showed up, and we basically just told them what we knew, gave everyone in the community the facts of the situation. And even our Lewis County Commissioner and Lewis County Manager showed up for that meeting and spoke as well. About what they knew. And so at that point in time, the community was made aware of what was happening. And then we started our fight at that point.
So what is the problem with having a bottled watering facility by a company the size of Crystal Geyser in a community like Randall?
So our immediate concern was the quantity of truck traffic that would be driving our, narrow county roads where we have a lot of people that use those roads to walk on, to run on, to ride their bikes. There's a community park just down the street. My kids walk to and from school buses. It's just not set up to have heavy haul traffic on it. And the noise and pollution from those trucks was our immediate concern. It's such a remote, quiet, rural community. We live here because it's beautiful and because it's peaceful. And we didn't want to have that type of industry right across the street. That was our initial reaction. And then when we found out a little more about water bottling companies, we researched Crystal Geyser and what they've had happen in parts of California, and realized that it was more than just the truck traffic. You know, they're drilling into the same aquifer that all of our wells for each of our individual homes tap into. So that supply would be diminished. And there are oftentimes in the summer here that people's wells go dry as it is. So it was a concern for the water as well.
What kind of community, how would you describe Randall? I mean, a lot of us have seen signs to Randall on our way to Mount St. Helens, but what kind of community is it, and how much of a drastic difference would it make to have an industrial plant in Randall?
So Randall is quite remote, and there's actually no incorporation here. There's not actually a town in Randall. It's just county governance and sparsely populated. Most people have either a 5-acre or 10, 20-acre parcels. So there's also some farming happening, some forestry happening. But in general, not a whole lot of commercial activity out here. People are here because they enjoy the peace and quiet. They're here to retire and just live in peace. So to have that type of commercial activity out here would be completely opposite of what people are here for.
And what's the political makeup of Randall? And is it a conservative community like much of Lewis County, or are there a bunch of old hippies there? I mean, what kind of place is it?
You know, that's an interesting question. I believe that it's mostly conservative. I think historically that's been the case. However, when we started this opposition to the bottling plant, we found out that many of our neighbors are, you know, quite liberal, and that was perfectly fine too. So I'd say it's a pretty good mix out here, really.
Now, I was wondering if you were aware of the struggle to stop Nestle's from building a bottled watering plant in Cascade Locks a few years ago, and if you tied in with those people who successfully drove Nestle out of the gorge.
Yes. When we first started researching about bottled water plants, you know, even prior to our town hall meeting, we had heard about Nestle and Cascade Locks. And we reached out to the folks there that were successful. And actually, a few of them were able to come up and speak to us at our town hall meeting, which was very helpful, very influential. You know, they were able to describe a scenario that nobody wanted to have happen here. And they gave us some encouragement about how they thought we'd be able to stop it. And that was fantastic.
What kind of tools do they supply you with? Organizing tools, that is.
You know, I actually did have some helpful conversations as far as, you know, examples of sort of flyers and terminology that they use in order to spread the word. And mostly what I got was a little bit of kind of behind-the-scenes mentoring on how to lead a group of people towards a common goal.
Well, it seems like one of the big challenges in rural communities when you're organizing around these issues is, first of all, finding commonality with your neighbors and finding language that's going to appeal to everybody, because you might have run into a lot of liberals that you didn't know were there, but I'm sure there were also some very conservative people that might also hear your message and agree with you.
Yeah, absolutely. It was quite eye-opening as we went down this road with the bottled water to realize just all the different angles there are to be opposed to it. And we were successful in basically bringing together all of those different angles, as far as, you know, starting with the truck traffic, starting with the commercialization of this residential area, and then diving into the water. And, you know, we partnered with the local tribes, the Cowlitz tribe. We partnered with the Friends of the Cowlitz, you know, environmentalist groups, people who are concerned about fish and wildlife and habitat. And then you've got the whole plastic side of it and bottled water and all those plastic bottles. You combine all that, and there's a pretty strong argument against it.
I'm curious about getting people to understand the problems of plastic. I mean, that's something a certain segment of the population these days is really aware of. And then there's other people who, it seems to me, still don't get it. So when you started talking to your neighbors about why plastic water bottles were not a good idea, what kind of responses did you get?
You know, most people that I spoke with about that topic were actually more educated on it and more against it than I even was personally at the start. I didn't really realize for myself what was going on with all the plastic bottles in the world. And I got educated from the people that I was talking to. So I would say the response was quite good.
When you started getting together, like, what kind of organizing did you do? I mean, were you having community meetings or going door to door? How did you reach out to people?
Yeah, so we got lucky because where Crystal Geyser purchased their property is directly across the street from our subdivision, which it has a homeowners association. We're actually a private air park as a part of the association. And we meet on a regular basis, and we're already organized. So we were able to use the tools that we already had in place to have special meetings regarding this topic. And that, and as a part of that, we invited additional neighbors outside of the subdivision that expressed interest in being, you know, a part of this opposition, and that they had wanted to contribute and have something valuable to contribute, and brought them in, and we all got together and would have kind of a what we called our core group of the Lewis County Water Alliance. We would meet and strategize, and then we also had bigger meetings where they would be at the county courthouse, whether it was a county commissioner's meeting or a county planning meeting. We would advertise that and encourage anyone interested in the issue to show up, and we had quite good attendance.
Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, Coast Community Radio in Astoria, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Craig Jasmer, who's with the Lewis County Water Alliance, about the fight to stop Crystal Geyser's proposed water bottling plant in Randall, Washington. Let's talk a little bit about Crystal Geyser. When I first heard that they were planning on building this water bottling plant, I was very familiar with the struggle in Cascade Locks against Nestle's, and I'm very familiar with many campaigns that have been fought against Nestle's over the last 35 years or so. But I thought Crystal Geyser was this kind of nice company, and I used to drink their water. So how was I wrong about Crystal Geyser?
Well, I tell you, Barbara, one of the main reasons that I got so actively involved in opposing this bottling plant was when I listened to a phone call that my father, who lives across the street from Crystal Geyser's property, had received, threatening him with lawsuit, threatening him that he needed to come to the table on this issue. And, you know, my father's the president of our HOA association here, and that's kind of why they targeted him. And I didn't take too kindly to that. And then we were fortunate enough to have that email leak where, you know, their vice president emailed the local newspaper and accidentally sent them all of their corporate strategy on how they were going to bring a lawsuit against our subdivision and claim that we were damaging the aquifer, and that they were going to hire a PR firm to develop, fake grassroots support here. What a gift that was to have that, so front and center in the eyes of our county commissioners.
Who were they intending to send that email to?
Yeah, so what happened was the journalist, Alex Brown, for the Chronicle, had been doing his research. He had spoken with many of us in the Lewis County Water Alliance. He had attended county commissioners meetings. And he'd been trying to communicate with Crystal Geyser and get their side of the story. And in his communications, he had asked, where they're at on this community response to their proposal. And Crystal Geyser had sent him a response that basically was, here's some brochures on why everyone loves us, where we currently operate. And his response back to Crystal Geyser was, well, I'm not going to publish your brochures, unless you answer the questions of the locals here in Randall, which he was avoiding. And at that point, the VP for Crystal Geyser intended to forward the email and with his comments over to the owner of Crystal Geyser. And instead, he hit reply. And his reply was just what I had described as far as the threats for the lawsuit and the hire the fake support.
So that didn't really help their standing in the community, I would imagine.
No. No, that pretty much, I would say, pretty well sealed their fate as far as the community felt against them. At that point, there were already...
Before we interject, actually, how did the word get out about the email? I mean, did Alex Jones publish it, or what happened?
Yeah, so Alex Brown, he published the article that included the full text of the email. And that was after he had received threats from Crystal Geyser. They called and said that they would sue the newspaper if they published the article. And they published it anyways, just as they should. And so they were already publishing articles on the issue. So to have this come out, people had already been following it. But to see this was... quite eye-opening for the community.
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit more about just who Crystal Geyser is as a company, because that was one of the things that surprised me. I mean, I didn't know who owned them. I thought they were a relatively small company, but who are they really?
Yeah, so Crystal Geyser is a subsidiary of a Japanese pharmaceutical company called Otsuka Pharmaceutical. They are a $12 billion pharmaceutical company.
And what are they doing with bottling water?
Well, bottled water is obviously a very lucrative industry, but their website describes that this company, CG Roxanne, which is the company we're referring to as Crystal Geyser, exports their water to Japan.
So do you think that there were plans more devious than just like bottling water and selling it around the Northwest, that in fact this was a way of really exporting a water resource that Washington State has, which is a very kind of unique resource to the Northwest, and not just exporting it around the United States, but exporting it overseas as well?
I would say so. It's in pretty clear print on their website that that's what they do.
So their intention, I mean, because we think of bottled water, and some people actually think of it as a necessity, though we're trying to train ourselves away from that. But why do you think that there's something maybe a little bit more insidious about these plans than just providing water in plastic bottles for people who need to drink water?
Well, you know, that's a big question, and one that we've, in our group, we've chatted about quite a bit. But, you know, Japanese culture, they're thinking generations ahead. And we believe that we should be too. But when you think of this capturing of water rights, which was really what they were after here in Washington, is they wanted a right to our water that they could use as they saw fit. And once they would have been awarded that right, there was nothing that we could have done to stop them from pumping. Water is obviously, I think, one of our most precious resources. So to have and basically own that resource, that would have been huge for that company.
Well, I think about how over the last number of decades, other parts of the United States have eyed the Columbia River Basin as a great source of water for them. In fact, I remember when I first moved here almost 50 years ago that California, Southern California, had designs on diverting part of the Columbia River. I don't know how they're going to do it, but across the mountains and down to Southern California to feed the thirsty cities and agriculture down there. And of course, there was a huge uproar. And I think there was even like federal legislation that prohibited it. At least there was state legislation from Oregon saying, no, you can't do that. This seems to me is like a more of a subtle way of trying to get at the resources that the Northwest has. And I wonder how you view that, if you're seeing that there's some danger that people are still eyeing our water resources as something that they would like to be able to import to wherever they are.
Yes, we think it's a real threat, which is why we brought the concern to our legislators in Olympia. And we're able to have that bill sponsored and passed the Senate. Basically, you know, they're proposing to bottle up the water and exporting it violates all of our water laws in Washington. The water's supposed to be here for the people in Washington to use. And we're trying to clarify that by putting it in plastic bottles and shipping it out of the state is not a beneficial use, and it's not in the public interest. So I think it's a very, very good concern, very valid.
So let's talk a bit about how you met with the county and got the county to become more aware of the concerns and what they did in response.
Yeah, so meeting with the county was actually fairly easy, fairly straightforward to start with. We just called the phone numbers of our county commissioners. And our local district county commissioner was Gary Stamper, and he came out and met with us and listened to our concerns and agreed and helped us communicate with the other commissioners and come up with a plan on what we ought to do.
So actually, let's talk about Lewis County. I mean, it's a pretty big county, isn't it? And it seems to me, my limited knowledge of it, that most of the population is centered in the I-5 corridor, but there's a huge stretch that's rural. So I wonder, first of all, how far are you from the actual county seat and how much connected do you feel like the county has been in the past with concerns in your part of Lewis County?
We're about an hour drive, maybe a little more, depending on which part of Randall you're in, to Chehalis, where the commissioners meet. So it's a bit of a task to participate in those county meetings. And the commissioners made us feel very appreciated every time we made the drive. So, you know, it's a challenge because we are remote and we're definitely more disconnected than others, but you know, they do Facebook live stream the county commissioner meeting, so that helps. And they're very available for us when we needed them.
So was there any hesitation at all when you first approached them, or did they get on board right away and realize that this was really a threat to your community and probably to the county at large?
So there's three county commissioners, and I would say that two out of three were very receptive to our concerns. The other was fairly silent on the issue. And at the end, when we ended up, when they ended up voting, you know, the vote was unanimous to change the code. And that third one that had been silent actually spoke, I think, the most and had the most positive things to say about what we did, which was really nice to hear.
So how were you changing the code? What was the code before that you needed to change?
So the code, when we first started investigating, we found that there was within the code, there was an allowance for permitting what's called the standalone food or beverage manufacturing, and that it was allowed in the zone that we're in. And the definition of that would have included bottled water. So we went through a process called the public participation process that we learned about just by reading the code, which is basically that we come to the county and we tell them that we want to raise a concern and potentially change the code. And then we meet with what's called the county planning commission and talk about what our concerns are and then develop an amendment to the code. And our amendment was basically that, yeah, you can have standalone food and beverage, but you can't have bottled water.
That's interesting because, I mean, aren't there certain other kinds of food and beverage industries that might be just as disruptive to Randall as the bottled water plant?
It's definitely possible. However, those types of industries would be smart to locate in an industrial area because it would be a good business decision. They have access to transportation. They have access to services. They don't need to pay for road improvements and all these things. However, a bottling company that wants to market spring water can't do that. They need to do it out in a location where there are no services because that's where the Alpine spring water is located.
So after the county commission voted to change the zoning so that this bottling water plant wouldn't be permitted, what was Crystal Geyser's next move?
Nobody's heard anything from Crystal Geyser ever since the email leak.
So what do you think that means?
It's hard to say, Barbara. I think that they probably realized that this community is not going to stand for them coming in here. Not only did we change the code, but if you drive the street out here, not just our local streets, but the main highways, you know, there's hundreds of signs that are against Crystal Geyser.
Well, I'm thinking about all these other fights, environmental fights that are going on in the Northwest, particularly in rural areas. I'm thinking about the methanol refinery that's being proposed for Kalama. I'm thinking about the Jordan Cove LNG export terminal in Coos Bay and the pipeline associated with that. That would cover much of southern Oregon. And in both of these cases, these other cases, the regulators have come out pretty strongly, the state regulators have come out pretty strongly against these proposals, and they have gone quiet, too. However, there's always this question in the back of opponents' minds to these projects that maybe there's a lawsuit brewing. And I'm just wondering if you think there's a chance that Crystal Geyser might also be planning on doing a lawsuit at some point down the line.
I wouldn't think so. You know, part of their leaked email even stated that they were surprised they hadn't been sued yet. I don't think that they're going to bring a lawsuit. The county did everything right. You know, they implemented a moratorium at our request, which stopped anyone from being able to apply for a permit for standalone food and beverage until we were able to finish our meetings with the Planning Commission and decide whether or not they needed to change the code. So they didn't apply for a permit with the county. They had only applied for a permit with the state and to get a water right. So I don't think that there's any opportunity for them to have a valid lawsuit.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus here on Cable Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, Coast Community Radio in Astoria, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Craig Jasmer, who is with the Lewis County Water Alliance, and we're talking about the fight to stop Crystal Geyser's proposed water bottling plant in Randall, Washington. So how far did Crystal Geyser get with applying for a water rights permit in the state of Washington?
They submitted their application for a preliminary testing permit. They were granted that testing permit by the Department of Ecology. And to my knowledge, which is as recent as just a couple weeks ago, the Department of Ecology has never received any results of their tests.
So it sounds like they're not following through on that part either.
You know, they have, I believe it was 3 years to submit their results. So I wouldn't say they're past due on anything, but you never know. They have not withdrawn their permit application, which, you know, several people have misspoke in regards to that. There were some senators, actually our local senators, Senator Braun, who spoke out in opposition of our bill when it was on the Senate floor in Olympia, which is ironic because he actually sponsored the bill to begin with. But he ended up speaking out and saying that Crystal Geyser had withdrawn their permit application, which was not true. They still have that application active.
Well, let's talk about what happened in Olympia. After you had success with getting Lewis County to change the zoning permits, actually, so that this facility could not be built in your community. What did you do next by going to Olympia?
Well, it actually wasn't really a next step. It was a parallel step. We started our efforts at the county. We also started our efforts at the state at the same time. And that was sort of part of our core group strategy. We wanted to hit them from both ends, basically. We wanted to cut it off at the state and cut it off at the county. So early on in our endeavors, we had met with the state legislators and started that process. It just ended up being coincidental that, you know, 9 months later, we would end up with a county code change happening the exact same week that the bill passed in the Senate.
So what was this bill? We haven't actually, you keep mentioning the bill, but we haven't said what it really is. So what was this bill that passed in the Senate?
The bill is a clarification on a use of water that's not in the public interest. The Department of Ecology in Washington State has a four-part test when they're analyzing a water permit application. And the fourth part of that test is what's called public interest. What the bill would have done would have said that a bottled water plant that's bottling spring water is not in the public interest. It's not a use of water that is in the public interest. And so that would effectively make it so that, you know, the 30% of the bottled water industry or so that bottles spring water would not have been able to do it in Washington State.
Are there any bottled spring water facilities in Washington State? I know that after Nestle's pulled out of Cascade Locks, they also went to a community that was east a bit down the Columbia River, and I think they failed, that community drove them out really fast. But I was wondering if there are any existing bottled water plants in Washington.
There are There are, I think, two or three. A couple of them are fairly small scale, and one called Talking Rain is larger scale, but they use mostly municipal water.
That's another, actually, I haven't seen their bottles in a while, but that's another bottled water that was very familiar maybe about 20 years ago. Does Talking Rain have a better relationship with the communities that they are operating in than Crystal Geyser was having?
You know, I don't know a whole lot about Talking Rain other than what they said at the hearings in Olympia, but I've never heard anything other than positive impacts on the community with that particular company. But they're doing something completely different than what we're talking about, where they're bottling municipal water and they're actually adding value to it. They typically flavor the water in some way, you know. So that's a different story than just bottling spring water and selling it as spring water.
What were they at the hearings for the bill that you were trying to get passed at the, in the state Senate? Did they have a position on that bill?
They did. They opposed the bill mostly because their statement was that they didn't like the language saying that bottled water isn't in the public interest. It basically offended them, it seemed like. They didn't really have anything other than that.
Now, I'm curious, did it go through the Senate first or through the House? How did it proceed and what happened is in the outcome?
It started with the Senate. We had Senator Carlisle out of Seattle who actually helped get the bill moving, with him sponsoring it and then partnering with our local Senator Braun, who sponsored it, and a few others. And it went through the committee process there and was successful, and then went through the Senate floor and was successful. And then it went over to the House, where it restarted the process. And it went to the House Rural Development, Agriculture, and Natural Resources Committee, and had a hearing there. And then when they went to have executive session on that bill, it was scheduled for a vote, and it just never got voted on. So, in essence, it was dead at that point because it didn't pass. They just chose not to vote.
Well, how did that happen? I remember getting a message from you after that saying that the lobbyists had their day. But I'm wondering, as it seemed like you were pretty positive after it passed the Senate, that this was going to become a new law.
I'm not really sure what happened, but what I saw as far as at the hearing in Olympia was a very, very strong and convincing voice of private citizens who were for the bill, and they wanted to stop bottled water plants in Washington. The only opposition was from, you know, paid lobbyists for the big business coming in and talking about how much of a slippery slope it is to designate a use as not in the public interest. So
where was it going to slip down to? That's, I'm kind of curious when they talk about the slippery slope. I mean, if it was, what were they concerned about? If bottled water was considered not in the public interest, what were the next things they were worrying about?
Oh, they mentioned some things as far-fetched as, if bottled water isn't in the public interest, what's next? Would it be apples? Because we used apples to, you know, we use water to grow the apples. Obviously, not even close to what we're talking about.
But it was effective.
I wouldn't say that argument was effective. I would say it's more likely that these lobbyists who, you know, donate to the campaigns of our representatives convince them that it was not in the representative's interest to classify them as not in the public interest.
Were you surprised by that this happened?
I was surprised. The panel in the committee was, as far as I knew, they already had the votes to pass it going in to the committee hearing. And at the hearing, it was so obvious that the people in the state wanted it. And just that these lobbyists for, you know, the Bottled Water Association didn't. So to have them not vote on it was definitely a surprise and disappointment. We're very unsatisfied with what happened with that committee.
So what can you do now?
Well, that's a good question. We're strategizing on that, and we've got some potential plans in the works. We're not certain exactly which way we're going to go, but we're definitely not going to stop.
You're not going to what?
We're not going to stop.
So what does that mean in the actual lay of the land?
Well, what I mean is we're not going to give up our opposition of bottled water plants in Washington State.
It's interesting because in the Cascade Locks, Nestle's battle, there were two things that basically killed that. And one was that there was a vote taken on the county level to basically ban bottled water plants in Hood River County. And then after that passed by a very large margin, and it didn't pass within the city limits of Cascade Locks, but even there it was pretty close. But then a little bit later, Governor Kate Brown basically denied the permit for Nestle's for the city of Cascade Locks to swap water rights with the Fish and Wildlife Department, which is where the water that Nestle's had their eye on was. And when she denied that water swap, then the whole project was dead. Here, first of all, it looks like you're looking at a statewide approach. And I'm also wondering if you're going for something that's even stronger than what Hood River County voted on.
When you say even stronger, what do you mean?
Well, I actually understand that Hood River County, well, first of all, Hood River County's ballot initiative was only countywide, and I don't know exactly how strong the language was to actually ban all future bottled water plants in the county. But is that your goal in Washington State?
Yeah, our goal would be to ban bottled water and the bottling of spring water throughout the entire state of Washington.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, Coast Community Radio in Astoria, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Craig Jasmer, who's with the Lewis County Water Alliance, about the fight to stop Crystal Geyser's proposed bottled watering plant in Randall, Washington. Well, for the last few minutes that we have, I just wonder what kinds of lessons you learned and how it's changed your community.
The lessons we've learned are to pay attention to what's happening in the county governance. They're making changes all the time. And one of the changes that was made about a year ago was the addition of this standalone food and beverage manufacturing as a permitted use in our zones. The county didn't intend on that opening us up to bottled water, but and maybe we would have never thought of that, but it was definitely a lesson that we should pay attention to what's happening there. We also learned that when we come together as a community, we're very strong. It was very clear that whenever there was an issue that had to do with our concern on the agenda at the county, that those commissioners knew they were to expect the crowd, and they respected that. We also learned that there are not always clear paths forward, that we had to be flexible and progressive in our adjustments that we made as we went.
I'm curious, did you like meet some really great people that you wouldn't have known existed? Because that's what I hear a lot from a lot of the other rural struggles fighting fossil fuel, that you come together with your community in a way that you never imagined before you had this common enemy, actually, so to speak.
Yeah, definitely. From the very start, when we had our first town hall meeting and had 300 people show up, we had people speak out that we hadn't met before, but became close friends at the end of this. And that was a great gift.
And how does that, do you think, help you strengthen your resolve to create, to turn Lewis County into the place that you can safely hope to live in the way you want to live in for the future?
Sorry, I didn't catch the first part of your question. Well,
I just wonder how, when you come together with these people and you make these new friends and you find this commonality, how does that help you to move forward in really acting out on a vision you have for the kind of place you'd like Lewis County to be?
Well, for me, it inspired me to continue the fight. You know, it was a lot of hard work, long hours, continuing to work my full-time job. I have 4 kids at home. You know, thankfully, my partner, Jasmine, was able to support me in this, and she spent a lot of time as well. But knowing that you have the support of your community when you're going in there to have these tough conversations with your county commissioners, it was everything.
And what do you think your county commissions learned?
I would say they learned to be skeptical of businesses that come in and promise them jobs and improvements in the community, especially when they're targeting our natural resources. But I think they also learned that the people out in the east end of the county, while we are a long ways away, we're fighters, and we've got a pretty loud voice.
So I guess the next struggle is to get back in front of this legislature and to find a way for them to see it your way. I'm wondering, is the legislature ending their session like they are here in Oregon? And what kind of timeline would you be on in trying to get the bill you tried to get passed this year passed in the next session?
Yeah, we plan to talk with the legislators when they're free again about this and kind of workshop on the issue and decide whether or not it should be something that's voted on by the people or something that's put up for their next session. And between now and then, I'm actually going to Washington, D.C. I think I mentioned that to you.
Yeah, you did offline, yes. But you're not going this week, I'm taking it.
It's still scheduled at this point, but I'm not sure if it's going to happen. But I think I'll learn a lot there as well, where they're doing this investigation on the bottled water industry as a whole. The privatization of water and effects on vulnerable communities, just like Randall. They heard about what happened here, and they invited me to come and testify in front of Congress there. So that'll be an experience, something I'm sure I'll learn from and bring back and share with the community here.
So who is it? The House that's doing this investigation?
Yes, it's the House Committee on Oversight and Reform, their Subcommittee on Environment. They're starting, I think the investigation's already started. They've got some issues with Nestle, I believe, in Michigan. and they heard about Crystal Geyser and this email and the threats to the community here, and they want to know more about that.
I'm kind of curious, if that email had not been sent to the journalist at the Chronicle, do you think you would have had as easy a time getting people to notice what was going on?
No, I think that that email was very fortunate to us. The other thing that was very fortunate was that when I had a meeting with Senator Carlisle, he mentioned the idea of a statewide moratorium. And that got me thinking that, you know, we ought to try for a countywide moratorium at the same time. And that's what we did. And I think that that's ultimately the move that was the most important move we made, is to get that moratorium in place before they could apply for a permit.
Well, one of the things that I've noticed with people I've talked to who get involved in these kind of community struggles that turn into much larger than local issues is the ways a lot of them were never political before, weren't environmentalists before, never did any organizing. I'm wondering, what was your past, and is this the first time that you've taken on a political struggle like this?
Yeah, that's definitely something I would have in common with those other folks. I was not active in any sort of political manner, and have learned a tremendous amount regarding politics and how things work, both at the county level and the state. I actually had a fairly candid conversation with one of our House representatives in Olympia, where I asked how he got started. And his response was that something had happened that just upset him. And because he was angry, he got involved. And I related to that on a very deep level when it comes to this battle. You know, when a company like this made a personal threat against my father and my community, that's when I got involved. And now that I am, I see that there's a lot of work to be done.
Well, Craig, it's really good to talk to you and learn about your struggle there in Randall to stop Crystal Geyser's water bottling plant. And good luck with the future. I hope that it is as dead as you think it is. And hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Okay, thanks, Barbara.
Okay, thanks a lot. Today we've been talking with Craig Jasmer with the Lewis County Water Alliance, and you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG LP FM and KODX LP FM, Radio Tacoma, and Coast Community Radio in Astoria. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear the show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. To hear previous episodes of this show or any of our other public affairs programming, go to kboo.fm or listen on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. Next week, we'll talk with Klamath Falls environmental writer and activist Emma Maris. I'm Barbara Bernstein, and I'm engineering for myself today from my home studio. Stay safe, wash your hands, and keep tuning into KBOO. Thanks for listening.